Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're ready for a show. I hope you are. Good morning. Welcome to our roundtable panel for this Tuesday, the 29th of March. Very nice to have you with us. Let me introduce our panel to you. If you were listening to yesterday's program, it's the same panel. But let me introduce him to you. It's WAMC's Alan Shartok is here.
You got it right, you got it right.
That makes us sound really boring. We've just been sitting here all night.
That's right.
I have the microphone. No one can hear
me. Very
We're
very well read, though. Right.
Yes. That's absolutely. Yes, you know all that's going on. Alan Shartok is here. Good morning, sir. Very nice to have you with us, of course.
That's nice of you, Joe. And everywhere I go, people are talking about this show. I had somebody stop me over to the Guido's yesterday in Great Barrington. It's the name of the store.
Yeah, Guido's, yeah. I love that store.
Yeah, it's a wonderful store.
They have great salmon. And,
great orange juice. Yeah. Have you heard of the orange
juice?
Yes, I have. Actually.
And they said, and incredible sushi that they make every day.
Oh, yeah. I want to go right now.
Yeah, and but anyway, so they stopped me and they said, listen, every day it's great. It's just great. I love Joe. I love Rosemary. You know, it's all terrific.
They love you too.
And Mike. Roselle said yesterday, "Is there a nicer man in the world than Mike Spain?" Unquote.
There's a few others.
Yeah. I don't believe so. Mm-hmm. Rosemary Romeo is with us. She is a University of Albany journalism professor. She's an investigative reporter, and she is our panelist most days, and we are very lucky to have her. We thank you very much for being with us. Mike Spain is with us again. He is the associate editor of the Times Union and joins us this morning. Mike, thank you very much.
Happy to be here.
Always great to have you with us. We have a very busy news day, as all these days seem to be here lately. And then, of course, the latest being what is happening there overnight from... just so most of you know, what we tend to do is look over some stories before I go to bed. I'll send out some suggestions to the group, and then whatever happens overnight, then we kind of deal with in the morning. Well, so there was a hijacking, Egypt Air hijacking, and the suspect has been arrested in a standoff in Cyprus. A man claiming to be wearing an explosive vest hijacked an Egypt airplane, forcing it to land in Cyprus before he was arrested, according to the government there. And one of the things that it's brought into to focus is really, unlike the 1970s and early 1980s, hijackings are really rare now.
Exactly. When I did my commentary this morning, I said... you know, I said, here we go again, you know, because we all lived through this spate of things. And they did all kinds of things like putting air marshals on the planes. Remember that? Mm-hmm. And then they installed a whole bunch of common sense things at the TSA when they made you take off your shoes. And
that didn't
your
stop hijacking.
Your belt and your...
No proof that TSA stopped anything.
Okay, I'll be honest.
Have to bring that up. Cockpits locked up stopped it.
I'll be honest with you.
And marshals on planes did, but not TSA. Let's be clear.
I'll be honest with you, Rosemary. I was baiting you.
Well, it worked.
Gee, it didn't seem that way, did it?
I was baiting you.
Well, which means is that you still, and I'm not sure they got on the plane with the vest, right? That's
we don't know that. We don't even know if he was wearing
a vest. In fact, it does not look now like he had the vest at all. So he didn't. But security at Egyptian airports has been under question for quite some time. You remember the Russian jet that was lost because of bad security. But this appears to be a real, not that any of them are lighthearted or not serious, but it appears to be that the guy was making a grand gesture to an ex-wife.
Yes, and
kind of romantic.
And
in
I'm
a sick
sorry
way.
For getting ahead of myself because I know Joe, as the moderator
Should
of
be
this program,
it up.
Would say, you know, setting it up. But the same thing happened at the Capitol yesterday. Guy with a BB gun, and
he was a
wacko.
Yeah, I mean, he really it wasn't a terrorist attack. It appears that it was just an individual who had come to, you know, to chant about. His vision of theology and government and how they clash, you know.
Which he
like
regularly
that.
Does right. yeah, at yeah. the Capitol.
He's, quote, known to us.
Well, he is known to us. And the other thing, too, that the fascinating story I read, I believe in the Washington Post, although I could be wrong, is that one of the things about the Capitol Visitor Center, which I don't know, have you all been to the new Capitol Visitor Center? I mean, their point is that it's basically built for this.
Yeah, and it worked.
I mean, it worked. It is built to keep people away from incidents, and other than a woman receiving minor injuries, it worked.
To contain the
man went through the metal detector. A gun was detected. The alarms went off. He brought out what was believed to be a weapon, although that still is under some dispute as to whether it was, right?
It's a pellet gun.
We haven't heard definitively on that.
It's a pellet gun. Yeah, that's what they say.
Okay. Because last I heard, they still hadn't really said that it was, but whatever went through, he brought it out and was brandishing it. So then the Capitol officer shot him.
Right.
But away from everybody else, and the point was that this entire center was built for exactly this scenario.
Well, can't they go to the Capitol anymore? The people's house?
They're not allowed to, yeah. Yeah, but it's to get in. So they bring you in basically in the basement.
Yeah.
And there's this entire center, and it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's really beautiful. And
it
feels like you are in the Capitol. Well, you are, but you are in the Capitol. But it is a very open, open space that allows a lot of large groups to sort of work through the system to...
Kind of like an airport.
Yes, although without all of the, because it's one by one going through, and it's very, it works very quickly and very.
Have you ever been to the Cliffs of Moher?
No.
Well, it's quite something in Ireland. And when Roselle and I went 40 years ago, you drove your car right up to the side of the place, and there you looked down and you saw this fantastic thing. Now we go back a couple of years ago. And now tourists are lined up and being shepherded in and shops and things, you know. So it's all very different. I know that's a little off topic, but I thought I'd mention it.
Well, handling tourism has become essential. No, it has. Yeah.
What's wrong, Rosemary?
He just thought he'd mention. I want to talk about peacocks. It has nothing to do with... My granddaughter likes them. They're beautiful birds.
I like peacocks.
Yeah. Well, getting back to the sequence,
sorry.
I remember going with my kids.
It was a debate issue a few months ago.
To the Capitol in the early 90s, and we walked in a side door, and we walked around, and I don't think we were supposed to go in that way, but nobody really stopped us. There were no things, and we went into like a cafeteria there that I think was for staff, and I don't think we were supposed to be
that?
There. In the Capitol,
in the
U.S. Capitol,
yeah.
Back pre, you know,
you'd
terrorism.
Be killed for that, man.
Oh, yeah, we never could do that today.
No.
I mean, it you know, you have a very limited area where you can go. I mean, even the state capitol, now you can't walk into it without going through.
Like those Capitol cafeterias. When I worked there as an intern, you get a steak sandwich like nothing else, and I gained about 40 pounds. And then now
a
that's
Blimpy Allen.
Now that's all over. But did you know that on the because of Uncle Joe Cannon, after whom the Cannon
office building
is named, there will always be black bean soup served in every one of the cafeterias every day? I thought you might not know that. So I thought I'd
let's hear about the peacocks again.
it's crazy. We're out of control.
And the black bean
you
soup
mean
and
I'm
the Cliffs of Moher are just amazing. Very, very good.
Not to mention Guido.
An Egyptian hijacking. Is this what we're talking about?
That's what we started talking about. Okay. Thank you for
hijacking
for
as
us
a romantic
up.
Gesture.
Well, you know, there were a lot more of them back in the 60s. And people used to remember, about like every other week, somebody would hijack a plane from Florida to Cuba, you know, and people would turn around and come back to Florida, you know, and the guy'd get off and get thrown into jail, you know. Mm-hmm. So I don't know.
Let's take it.
Well, we heard, I just want to say very quickly, we heard from Rich Guthrie, the Birdman.
Yes.
The Birdman of WAMC, who said, please, that's not a story any more than a carjacking in Philadelphia, only on a grander scale. Continued coverage and commentary will only embolden similar unstable minds out there. See rise in mass shootings and the old history of political hijacking, suicide by headlines, self-fulfilling prophecy. Please move on. That's all I've been trying to do, Rich. Move on. You know,
Dover,
peacocks.
Well, you brought up the peacock.
Yeah, that's all right.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we will hopefully get some semblance of order, and we'll be back right after this short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Boyden and Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, offering lawn and garden equipment, parts, and service to customers throughout Western Massachusetts. A family-owned business for over 50 years, BoydenandPerrin.com. Davidson Brothers Brew Pub, featuring food, ales, entertainment, and more, serving lunch and dinner 7 days a week in downtown Glens Falls, New York. DavidsonBrothers.com. and Alacrity Frame Workshop, Lark Street, Albany, New York, offering custom framing and new exhibits every first Friday. Open 7 days a week, 518-915-1956.
Good morning and welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We're going to take a break at the bottom of the hour. I do want to talk about the Apple iPhone unlock case. I find this case fascinating. It is really interesting to me for a couple of reasons. So one is that the U.S. Had been asking Apple to help them unlock this phone of the San Bernardino attackers that killed 14 people, then they were suing Apple and saying, we need your help. So now the Justice Department said that they found a way to unlock the iPhone.
Oh, don't worry. We found a way to do it.
Yeah. So now the question is, Apple wants to know how did you do that?
We got to fix that.
And, of course, I'm sure the story is not over when it comes to the legal machinations that will be going back and forth. Meanwhile, the Justice Department has withdrawn its legal effort to compel the tech company to assist in a mass shooting investigation. And obviously, Tim Cook of Apple has defended the company's battle with the government throughout this. So where does this leave the – one of the things that I thought was buried in the story, which I guess I sort of understand, and yet they never really said what – okay, but they unlocked it, but what do we find out? We don't really know that, or was it worth it? You know, I guess is my question.
The FBI has just begun, supposedly, to look at the material, and there is no word yet on what, if anything, they found.
Right.
It's not a given that there is anything.
But, you know, I think the real question here is, what was the FBI up to? In other words, were they really after setting a principle, which was, you have to do this when we ask you to? And now we get, oh, by the way, don't worry about it. A third party has come in here and told us how to do it. I said from day one, I always assume everybody's listening to everybody's, you know, iPhones. And they've been able to do that for a long time. Hey, you look at all the mafia programs, which I love on television. Those guys are being monitored 24/7 right from the beginning. So I suspect it was really a power play on the part of the FBI and the Justice Department, and maybe even a telephone call from the White House saying, this is not helpful.
Well, you have to wonder what kind of there is mystery as to how this hacker kind of
who the third party is
appears and says, I can do that. So this, as the article in the New York Times this morning indicates, the development also creates potential for new conflicts between the government and Apple about the method used to open the device and whether the technique will be disclosed. Lawyers for Apple have previously said the company would want to know the procedure used to crack open the smartphone, yet the government might classify that method.
What would Apple do if they got that information? They'd fix the flaw that somebody came in through, the leak.
This is an old system. There's no evidence that the flaw hasn't already been fixed in the iPhone 6. It's hard to know who to cheer for in this. You've got the U.S. government, which has a penchant for spying, or the most valuable, profitable company in the world. Both have motives here that are not our best interests. But I'm glad that they're fighting about it, and I thought all along the FBI didn't really need Cook to tell them how to do it, that they'd figure it out, and they're trying to set a principle, and he resisted. So now maybe we'll listen to Senator Warner and have a meeting and figure out what's the best way to do it.
Now it will be addressed without the sort of the pressure of a court ruling, and you know, they chose this case because it's a very highly emotional case, the San Bernardino killings by a terrorist couple. And there's hundreds and hundreds of other cases that they could have chosen, but they chose that one, so it's very high profile. And now it can be argued in Congress and debated, and maybe something reasonable can be worked out. But, you know, it's tough. You know, you want to be able to be secure. And if you open a door or have a key, it's not going to be secure, period.
Right, Mike. And what if the guy had, what if it was all about getting information about somebody who was running around with a smart nuclear bomb? Just put it that way.
Exactly. Or in the Belgium attacks. Well, they have recovered devices. And you certainly want them to get any information they can. But it's just complicated. It shouldn't be done in the emotion of a case. It should be debated, and all the issues should be brought up, and maybe legislation should be worked out.
I just want to underscore Rosemary's point, because I think it's a good one, is that the it's an iPhone 5C running with iOS 9. So it could very well
now?
Right. I mean, we very well all of this could have been taken care of already. We don't even know that.
Right. I said from the beginning that the FBI did not need Apple. They have already cracked another version of the 5, not the 5S, and it's very close. Those guys are smart enough to have done it. This is about making a bigger point.
Or it may be about somebody making a lot of money, because if the FBI has now identified the third party.
That's going to leak out? I mean, it's going to be like a graduate student in Michigan, or a teenager in Oxnard, California.
I hope so. Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's just going
to
be
now
something.
He goes to Apple and says, you want me to help you with this?
Right.
Like, I know how to do that, man. Just do this, like, you know.
And suddenly, he's a new vice president.
Passetto writes to us and said, did the FBI get a 10-year-old to break the code?
Exactly.
Probably. We're somewhere in that age group. At least I hope that's the case. Let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue. We have a lot of other stories to talk about. Roundtable at WANC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org is our email address. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Mike Spain making up the group this morning. We'll continue our conversation after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Nice to have you with us. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. And we have some letters to get to, which we will take care of, and then we will get to the many other topics that we have to discuss.
Well, Kathleen says, Joe, it was probably an Israeli security group, which on its website says it can break the iPhone 5, according to new reports I have read. And Adam says, what does the panel think about Hillary refusing to honor her commitment to have further debates until Bernie changes his tone? Well, I didn't know. I never read that, and neither did Rosemary.
I've just found it. It was actually her campaign strategist, Joel Benenson, who said, let's see the tone of the campaign he wants to run before we get to any other questions.
Well, wait a second. You know, the guy who is in the lead never wants to debate the person who's coming up. Wants a debate. We all know that Papa Cuomo used to do it all the time. Mm-hmm. So for whatever
it's for her to debate.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So then Melissa says, "Hey panel, I just wanted to say the iPhone 5 that they unlocked did not have the newest technology. That is a computer chip that is separate from the phone that makes it a lot harder to crack. They can't be sure it was that, but it seems obvious." And James and Quinn said, "No, that's wrong. We don't want her." Colleen Quinn, she's from New York. Forget that. James.
What?
Colleen, what's
former
her name?
City Council President, mayoral candidate?
It
was one of those. See, I'm reading Siriatim.
I got
one
you.
After another, don't
I,
you?
I thought suddenly we had a policy.
Kind of stream of consciousness. That's
right.
A little bit.
Okay. And my conspiracy theory says James, is that someone from Apple unlocked the phone in exchange for plausible deniability and dropping the legal action. Gotta be.
Sure, why not?
Sure.
Possible.
And Peter says, I heard Richard Clark say on NPR that the NSA could have unlocked that phone, but the FBI wanted the legal precedent. That was my point earlier today.
That's
extremely plausible.
Yeah. Okay, and Peter says, there goes the theory that the government deliberately put out the disinformation that they needed Apple's help to crack the phone. This is in order to mislead the terrorists, Peter. Martha says, Alan, it's navy bean soup, not black bean soup, Martha. WAMC wishes to correct its earlier assertion. Right, okay. And dear Alan, short attention span, Shartok. One, I love your show, Rosemary Rocks. Two, what do you think of the Mets' chances this year? Thanks, Bill.
That's completely off topic.
Well, no, that's the point. I mean, that's
yes,
his point. Don't you?
I like
don't
it.
You see?
I see.
And then I think that's pretty much it. Yes, Joe. Did you see something?
No, that seems good to me. Excellent. So let's move on to other topics. Do we want to talk about?
Yes.
Well, I do want to get to the RNC gun story.
That's a great story.
Yeah.
So that is a great talk about heisting somebody on their own petard.
Okay, so the Secret Service. So there was a petition that came around, an online petition in support of the effort for open carry of firearms during the Republican National Convention in Cleveland, basically saying, hey, Republican candidates, since you are the ones who have been talking so much about how important these gun laws
and the right to carry,
we're going to come to the convention and we want to have a gun with us. We want to pack heat.
Yep.
And then all of the candidates kind of were like, I have to look.
And I didn't read it yet.
And then, I haven't looked at this.
Trump said I didn't read it.
I have to go see what happens. Kasich said, all that matters is what the Secret Service says. Well, then the Secret Service came out and said, that's not going to happen. There's no way in hell people are going to go to a convention with guns.
Well, interestingly, the NRA did not allow concealed weapons to be carried into the main hall at one of their last conventions.
Oh, so, interesting.
Yeah. I mean, it just proves the theory that everyone is worried about guns getting into the wrong hands. And it's a legitimate concern. And, of course, the Secret Service, who was assigned to protect all the presidential candidates, would not allow it. They never would allow it. It's just this is a story that is intended just to inflame the situation.
I think that the whole thing was a hoax by an anti-Second Amendment strategist who had a brilliant plan and made them look funny, put them in a bad position. I don't think there's anything real about it.
Well, if politics is the authoritative allocation of scarce resources, perhaps you've heard me say that before, then the Secret Service has now saved the hash of the Republican candidates by making this definitive statement. Better they should have shut up.
Why, you would have liked to see them shoot it out?
No, I would have liked to see them come in, but at the end and say nobody's bringing a gun in here.
No, as you know.
But now these guys are all swinging around on that, hoisted place, and therefore
the hoisted place,
and therefore they have gotten them off the hook. That's my point, Rosemary. Don't you see?
You know, in 2004, I was covering the Democratic convention in Boston, and they have sponsors, and of course the big corporations that are there. Well, one of the corporations which had the stadium is Gillette. Gillette was giving everybody razors.
Razors, of course.
As you walked in, and that was in the little bag that you got when
horrible.
You walked in. So the people were walking in, and nobody was making it through security on the first day because they had razor blades in their bags. And everybody's like, "Well, I don't have anything. I don't know how this happened." And they're like, "Yeah, we can't have the razor blades." So finally, they got all the razor blades away, and they threw away. Gillette threw away something like $2 million and all the razor blades they gave away. But it just stands to reason that if you have that kind of security, you have that kind of convention, you're not going to allow a razor, a gun, anything like that.
A bottle of water.
Well, I remember being at the Republican convention in 1988 in New Orleans, and all the women were coming in just to spend, who were with their husbands or partners at the convention, and they were dressed to the nines because they were going to go out and party afterwards, and they all had to take all their jewelry off and put it aside and go through the metal detectors. It was such a drag.
Those brooch pins.
Oh, I know.
The bone. To be sharp.
Oh, no, please keep
going. Oh, no, no, we're not going to sing the Gillette theme.
All right. No. So.
Was that an owl or what kind of bird? What? Never mind.
Did you have in your coffee this morning? He's way out of control.
Anything else on that as far as
it is amusing.
Let's talk about boycotting North Carolina.
He says it's amusing. I say it couldn't be a better story because it really showed these foolish people up for what they are.
Let us also go to, we're now taking stories by request, ladies and gentlemen, and we're going to go to North Carolina. And Georgia involved in this story as well, correct?
Yes, but in Georgia, the governor did the right thing and vetoed the bill that would have discriminated against transgender people.
Okay. And then in North Carolina, the governor is now being sued for the legislation that
signing the bill into law. The city of Charlotte had passed a law that protected the rights of transgenders to use alternate bathrooms. So a teenage boy who identified as a girl could go into a ladies' room. Before that law could even take effect, the North Carolina legislature passed their own law that overrided Charlotte's law, that said Charlotte's law cannot take effect, and the governor now has signed it. And Governor Andrew Cuomo has ordered that any state business with North Carolina not involve travel there, if at all possible, until this changes. And I think some others, right, Rosemary?
The cities of San Francisco and Seattle have both
boycotts. Did the governor do the right thing by vetoing it?
Oh, no. The governor in Georgia had
a similar bill and did veto it. A lot of pressure
from Hollywood, said that if you don't veto this, we're going to pull all of our – they do a lot of filmmaking in Georgia.
Right. Yeah.
And in North Carolina, it happened very quickly, and that kind of pressure didn't build. And now that they have signed a bill into law, the governor of North Carolina has signed a bill into law that discriminates against transgenders. This is how people are viewing it.
I continue to be very jealous of the power of the transgendered movement. You did not see this sort of solidarity around discrimination against blacks or against women or against gays and lesbians. Why is it that it's so powerful?
It took a long time, though. There was a big debate in the gay community about whether they should include transgender as
on
they
the list.
Saw it. Right. And for a long time, there was quite a divide. And in fact, New York Pride, mm-hmm. which was a lobby group, says they were going to unregister as a lobby because they had achieved their goals. And the transgender laws and GENDA, which is a package of bills before the state legislature that cannot get up for a vote in the Republican-controlled state Senate, has not happened. So the governor of New York, Governor Cuomo, has been using executive order to try to correct that. But the problem with that is another governor could just decide not to enforce the previous governor's executive order. So it's a big issue everywhere. They've made great progress, but it has not been easy, and it's taken a long time.
I just want to, just a programming note, but Reverend William Barber, who is the head of the NAACP in North Carolina, as well as has a group called Moral Monday, and is fighting the voter suppression laws in North Carolina. And he will be speaking at Siena College tomorrow as part of the MLK lecture series, and he'll be on the show today, and we do talk about this particular case. So,
well, congratulations, Joe. That's a good get.
Well, he's really interesting.
Is that later in the second hour?
Later in the show, yeah. It'll be sometime there, Mike.
We'll just be sitting here waiting for tomorrow.
Yes,
so
it'll be coming up at 11 o'clock. Yes, 11 o'clock it'll be coming up. That's right. And
which you can always get in a podcast, can't you, John?
Yes, you can. WAMC.org. It's as simple as that. Okay, so there is that. Do we want to talk about voter suppression?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about voter suppression in Arizona. We have discussed this. We will continue to. One of the issues there has been, and by the way, can I just a quick sidebar, because one of the other stories that has come up over the, and maybe someone can explain this to me because I've heard it time and time again, but I don't quite understand it. We also heard that Donald Trump is going to be suing Ted Cruz because Donald Trump won the primary in Louisiana. However, Ted Cruz will come out of the state potentially with more delegates. Can someone explain that to me?
He's a good explainer. I defer to Mike.
The rules by which delegates are assigned can, you know, the party has enormous power. They can
New York
overrule.
Too, by the way.
Yes, in New York also. And this is how it's possible that Trump could make it to the convention with just a few delegates short and get denied the nomination. I mean, the parties have their own rules. The law, he won't have any standing, I don't think, in a court of law. This is just blather.
Well, he just wants to point it out.
Yeah, he wants to point it out. And he's gotten it. He just got it pointed out right here.
And in New York, if I read the story correctly, there, what happened was, at least on the Democratic side, I probably have this all messed up, but that the the party picks, the delegates, not the person who is running. So Trump doesn't get to pick his own delegates who are running. The party picks them, and then I think it's on the Republican side too. And then then those people can be easily swayed when they're needed to
vote
to be.
For
yes.
a particular.
That's disgusting.
And they might have been Bush or other, you know, other.
Yeah, that's disgusting.
Votes that can go anywhere they like.
What I want to talk about Arizona, and I want to talk about voter suppression in Arizona. We need to take a break, so let's do that real quick. We'll take a break. We'll come back, and then we'll talk about that topic coming up next.
Support for WAMC comes from Careers in Transition, LLC, Albany. Dr. Tom Denham providing career guidance, testing, job strategies, interview preparation, LinkedIn lessons, resume, and cover letter writing. CareersInTransitionLLC.com. Cafe Capriccio, Chef Jim Ruo, working to preserve and maintain the traditions of Italian cuisine and hospitality since 1982 on Grand Street in Albany, New York. CafeCapriccio.com. And the Empire State Plaza Performing Arts Center presenting David Bromberg with Jorma Kaukonen, Keb Moe, and Larry Campbell on Sunday, April 3rd at 7:30 at The Egg in Albany, theegg.org.
Arizona Democrats are calling for the Department of Justice to investigate what caused some voters to wait in line for 5 hours to participate in the Arizona primary. Phoenix Mayor Greg Stanton requested that Attorney General Loretta Lynch launch a federal investigation into the situation because of the unacceptability of disparate distribution of polling locations. I respectfully request the U.S. Department of Justice investigate what took place and Maricopa County to ensure all voters are treated equally under the law, according to the Phoenix mayor, Greg. This from the statement from the Phoenix mayor, Greg Stanton. The Department of Justice has not publicly, I believe, responded to the request.
Correct. Okay, so let me just say something. People who are Republicans are more likely to vote than Democrats. Got that? We know this. Republicans exercise the franchise more than Democrats do. So in other words, I'm not saying Republicans win elections. Right. But if you have a group of Republicans, they're more likely to go to the polls. Does this have to do with money? And does this have to do with economic status? The answer is yes, it does.
You could argue it has to do with their civic duty. They're honoring their civic duty.
But so, oh, I see. So that Republicans have more civic duty, you're saying, Mike?
Perhaps. Yeah, that's an easy extrapolation to make.
Okay,
I digress.
But yes, you do. And I'm saying, and I think I'm right about this, that when you take a look in the New York State Legislature or other places, when it comes to things like same-day registration or getting people to the polls or even electronic voting, forget about it. The Republicans in the state Senate, which is, by the way, one of the reasons why taking the state Senate may become so important, don't want it. They don't want it at all. So it's almost universal throughout the country that those are the people who are going to say, we're going to make it harder for people to vote. Bring a license, bring a voter registration card, bring something that will turn some people off, right?
And you reduce the number of polling places, and people have to wait in line a long time, and some people cannot.
And you know what you're doing when you do that reduction.
Right. I also want to just bring up two things. Historically, the Department of Justice had to approve any changes in voting procedure in Arizona because of the state's history of discrimination against minorities in voting.
Thanks to the Supreme Court.
But a Supreme Court decision in 2013 allowed Arizona to begin making changes without federal oversight. Leaders said if federal scrutiny had been required before making changes last Tuesday's situation would have never happened. Meanwhile, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, who lost Arizona to Democratic frontrunner Hillary Clinton, called the situation a disgrace.
It is a disgrace.
It is a disgrace. I think that's why you're getting all the letters from people saying, let's talk about Arizona, because Bernie's people are on it. But it is totally wrong. It's another Antonin Scalia legacy that we're dealing with.
And for all those people who are writing me letters saying, Alan, you're just dead wrong. It doesn't matter. I'm voting for Jill Stein, the third party candidate from Massachusetts, and I'm not going to vote for Hillary Clinton, to which I always write back and say, and the Supreme Court and Citizens United? Mm-hmm. Right. Question mark? Mm-hmm.
This is actually not Citizens United is a bad piece of
Supreme Court
bad
ruling
by the Supreme Court, but this actually is their hacking of the Voting Rights Bill.
That's again another piece of proof as to who those five people in the majority were all this time, and why the Republicans are stomping their feet and saying that Obama can't be allowed to appoint a new judge to the court because it reverses that 5-4 the other way.
I've said this before, and I know it's being overly simplistic and overly idealistic, but I do not understand. I guess I do understand. It's because we don't want to. But, you know, voting should not be this difficult. Voting should be very, very easy.
There is no evidence of widespread voter fraud anywhere.
Okay, wait a second.
There's no evidence of even small-scale voter
That's
fraud.
Right. That's
it just
exactly
doesn't
right.
happen.
Okay, wait a second. Zap. Joe, I'm making you into a conservative Republican. Zap.
Yeah.
Now, you're sitting in the state legislature. You're going to vote for making it easier?
Oh, I got to take a shower. What? I understand why, but we certainly have, if you are in Zimbabwe and you have your American Visa card and you go into a straw market and have them swipe your card, that money comes out in 4 seconds. We have amazing technology in this country, and I find it very hard to believe that we can't come
Voting
up with
so
some
difficult.
System that allows people to make a secure vote.
My mother used to say accidentally on purpose.
Well, no, I understand that, but why can't
we? It's outrageous. That
I just
we
told
don't
you
have
why.
It,
and What's we the matter
don't,
with you?
And we don't push for it. We the people could push for this.
Remember all the reforms after the 2000s.
That's
debacle?
What I was just about to say. I mean, it's not like we haven't been down this road where there was a great clamoring for a major change. We went through how long in New York State? Was it 6 years, 7 years to come up with the new voting machines and that we were going to do?
And it's so much better now.
No, it isn't.
Well, they do say that it is, that we've come a long way from the lever machines. I personally don't see it. I like the little levers.
I know. I like the tactile touching of the
lever.
Well,
I don't see how putting the thing in the folder and then feeding the folder into the machine of how that is. I don't understand that.
Apparently, it is.
What it does is it records onto a computer the vote, mm-hmm. and then it also has a backup in case that computer fails, and you can go feed them back through another computer or count them manually. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you're in line 5 hours. What do?
You need water. It's Arizona. It's really hot. People were going around handing out water to help people get through, but a lot of people just went away.
That's right. You leave and you don't vote.
Why it happened. Why did they cut the number?
Why did they cut the number?
Polling places so drastically. Why did they do that this year? Because they don't want a lot of voting. That changes results.
In one county, there were 200 polling places in 2012, and there were only 60 this time.
Yeah. I mean, that's more than half. That's ridiculous.
So you can expect, especially in this election cycle where there has been huge voter turnout, that, I mean, even a few weeks before, you're going to know that there's going to be a lot of people waiting. And you also know that you're not going to get to everybody.
They knew what they were going to do. They knew why they were doing it. That's the whole point that we're getting all of these letters because they're doing it. Somebody wrote it and said that, I don't know if this is true, pardon me, but that what's going on is that Bill Clinton's lieutenant governor in Arkansas is somehow mixed up in all of this.
That's just slander. But this is a criminal matter.
Question. Who is it that has less flexibility to wait in line for 4 hours? People who are in lower-paying jobs
who are flipping hamburgers.
And if they'll lose their jobs if they don't go back to work after an hour.
As they say in the House of Commons, I refer you to the earlier, I said that already. I already said that. I made the point that they know what they're doing.
Okay, we'll just stop talking. You just make all the points.
Hey, Rosemary.
This is a criminal matter. It'll be interesting to see if Loretta Lynch.
I never promised you a rose garden.
Loretta Lynch, the Attorney General,
if she has
been asked to look
into
it.
Yeah, that will be extremely interesting. And that's how it gets fixed, is if the Justice Department is involved.
All right. Do we want to go through some remaining letters in the 2 minutes that we have left?
Okay. Arizona was an economic decision, says Jack. Voter ID is a must. It is not difficult to obtain ID. Of course, you wait until the last minute to obtain ID. It can be difficult, as with anything. Filing taxes, car inspection, bill paying, etc. Bill says, Hillary, does anyone think Hillary has any interest in reversing Citizens United decision? Really?
Yes, I do. It was directed at her. It was her commercials that started the whole thing. Not her commercials. Commercials against her.
And from Hi There. That's the name. Hi there. If the powers that be really wanted the American people to vote for their president, then Election Day would be a federal holiday. I believe it is more important than many of the existing holidays. Jay said that. Nicholas says, "Why? I've listened to your show and I love it. Since relocating to the area a few months ago, however, I've always been curious as to why you call emails letters. Can someone elaborate? Is it just a preference for term? Thank you, Nicholas, a former Minnesotan."
It's still a letter, right?
No.
Why don't we call them communiques?
No. I see his point, of course. These are emails and not letters. Of course, I reject the letter because, you know, I think letters schmetters. Who cares?
Yeah, because it's the method of delivery. It is not the actual.
Nice point. Okay. We as a country can have people vote online, mobile phone, to vote for the next
Rosemary's flatlining.
What?
There are important matters in the world. Whether to call it a letter or email is not one of them.
Well, we love people's letters and their emails.
We love the letters.
I like that last email you had, too.
Yeah, right. And James says, we as a country can have people vote online, mobile phone, to vote for the next American Idol in 60 minutes. We don't have anything like that voting for president. And I already told
American
you why.
American Idol doesn't have to go through the Electoral College either. You don't for a delegate to put your vote in for the American Idol. We should use that model.
Okay, here's the one I was looking for from
System
Ken.
Exists.
Gal who cut polling places from 200 to 60 was the wife of Bill Clinton's Arizona lieutenant governor. The anti-Bernie fix was in. Okay, Holly says.
All right, one more.
Okay, Holly says, transgender people are extremely vulnerable population. While the movement has made great strides of late, transgender people face a harsh reality in their daily lives that many of us cannot imagine.
We are out of time, but let me thank Alan and Rosemary and Mike, and we will continue the roundtable and, of course, have our panel back tomorrow. Thank you very much. Roundtable at WAMC.org.